This is
Positively Hygiene
with your host, Amber Lovatos,
Amy Parenti,
and Angela Doe.
Listen on as we dive into the positive of dental hygiene. I'm in need of some coffee because this is our fourth recording of our podcast today, but this is a good one. We're going to talk about interviews, which I would advise no coffee before interviews for dental hygiene school or actual interviews. You're already like really nervous. You get some caffeine in you. You're going to be some extra nervous.
That's a good point. I would never think of that.
Yeah. So I had a hygiene applicant when I was an educator doing interviews who was so nervous. She couldn't look at me and she started crying during her interview.
Oh,
I know. It was so sad. She like couldn't look at me, couldn't shake my hand. And I was like, okay, you and I maybe didn't do so well, but for this next one, and I had to practice with me. I was like, you're going to look in their eye, shake their hand, introduce yourself. Nope. Tell me why she went on to the next one and did the same thing. And I started crying. It was just too much for her. I would say do some meditation. For me, what helps is like if I like work out and then do a meditation. So get some of that extra energy out of you. And then practice. Like your interview skills before going into an interview.
Yeah, I definitely like practice talking, even talking out loud while in the car going to the interview, because it's one thing when you're reviewing it in your head and reviewing things in your head, but another thing when you're actually saying it and having to like think on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
So I like talk out loud while I'm driving to the interview. I think I did that for my dental hygiene school interview. I got into the mood of things, you know, and got used to talking.
Yeah.
For my dental hygiene school interview, we had like round tables.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Have a spiel. Like a 3-minute spiel of who you are in a nutshell and practice that out loud. Oh, and the other thing was like, oh, I think that's what I did. We had this table and they made you introduce yourself. And I was the first one to like stand up because everybody else was like sitting and doing their like, this is who I am. And I was like, I'm going to stand. And then after me, people like stood. You know, you got to do those little things to make yourself like stand out a little bit.
Stand out.
Title of the podcast episode.
Did they, there was other applicants in your hygiene school interview?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So the way, I don't know if we.
Yeah, probably the same.
So they had maybe, let's say like 20 people come. And then half of those people were filling out like a questionnaire. So we had like a written interview. And then the other half did like a round table and went to different professor's office and was asked a question. So it was one-on-one, but there were other students. And so then when you started school, you remember like who got in and who didn't.
Yeah. I mean, I do and don't remember, but there was one girl who I remember she was dressed super casual, like to the point where she was like, oh, I should probably put on my sweater and my jacket. I was like, yeah, you should probably do that.
Clothing is like my number one thing. I remember when it said like business professional, I'm like Googling, what does business professional mean? And yeah. I went out and got it.
I got a whole suit.
Me too.
Most money I had ever dropped on anything, I think, at that point.
My first and only suit I ever bought from head to toe.
That, I think I found it like a few years back and I was like, dang, I was skinny.
I don't fit it anymore.
not even one leg. No, I was so small back then.
But how you present yourself.
Yeah, how you present yourself, like brush your hair, make sure your clothes is ironed.
Smile.
If you can avoid wearing tennis shoes, avoid wearing tennis shoes. Like wear some flats. Make some effort to like look nice. I don't know if they did this in y'all's program, but they measured us for our white coats. And I was wearing like a, not like a tank, but like a half sleeve situation shirt underneath my blazer. And so then I had to take off my blazer and I just felt like, oh, had I known I was going to have to take off my blazer, I would have worn something with a little bit more coverage, you know? So maybe it's like something like you wouldn't think of. I don't know if they still do that now where they like will measure you for white coats, but consideration, maybe wear something that underneath your blazer that you could feel comfortable taking your blazer off.
And I know for me, how I prepared for the interviews was asking, Amber was like my connection because I met her, if you know her story. I met her while she was a student on rotation and she gave me her number while I was observing as a non-student. And then so I reached out to her when I got my interview and asked like, hey, could you like give me some insight on how the interview is? So she then connected me with somebody who like just gone through the interview process and they like gave me some questions that they asked. Of course, they can change from year to year, so took them with, you know, a grain of salt as like these are possibilities. But that really helped, just knowing even the format and what to expect.
Yeah. So it ended up changing our program interview style. Ended up changing because so they'd still do the group interviews, but then there was no like handwritten grading of things. Mm. I don't think anymore. Instead, we do like speed dating. We're like, you're sitting in the hall and then there's like a timer that goes off and you just move. You get to see every faculty member, get interviewed by every faculty member. Every faculty member has a prompt on the table. And so what we would do, we had a rubric where we would grade students on how well they answered the question, their professionalism on like, we had like, I don't have the rubric anymore, but we had like categories on what we would, how we would grade you. So I could be like very objective instead of like, oh, I like this person. No, like I'm giving them a grade for every like little category. But basically I would, I'm like, here's a question. You let me know when you're ready. And once they're ready, they would answer the question. Yes, and then the timer would go off and they would go off to the next one.
I remember when I would see them writing, I'd be like, oh, that's good. Like, because they're writing while, well, some of them would write while you talk. So you know how you said you, to stand out, you stood up?
Uh-huh.
Now looking back, I'm like, was this like a really nerd move of me? But I brought copies of my resume and gave them to each instructor as I saw them and did my question.
And that's pretty cool.
And I think they were like confused. But I don't know. Maybe it made me seem like more professional or that I cared or something. Yeah.
It was so all different. I don't know if it was just one day that they did interviews. I definitely didn't cross paths with another student or potential student when I was going to the interview, but it was just two faculty members. Those faculty members changed. Like other friends I had in the program didn't have those same faculty members. It was just you as an applicant saw two random faculty members from the program. Yeah. So I had like the easiest one in the program, like the most easiest going, the one that like the director says she'll never let her teach out of first semester because she's too soft. So she says she's like only, she can only do like the newbies because she's like so kind and sweet. I had her and then I had like the hardest professor. Yeah.
It was funny
because the soft professor, she was the one that I had taken before applying to the program as a prerequisite. We had to take nutrition and she was my nutrition professor and she recognized me. It was an online course, but she recognized my name. She's like, I think you were in my nutrition class. And I was like, I was. And she goes, and from what I remember, you did pretty well. Cause I had, you know, I had an A in the course the whole time. And so I was like, I did. And then, so she was laughing and then I started laughing and I looked across the table to the other one and she was just stone cold, like staring at me like, don't you dare think you have this in the bag, young lady. You know, like it was so intimidating. Like she was just like staring, like glaring at me. And I just immediately dropped my smile and I was just like, okay, like I'm in it.
We did like the speed dating and then we had the one faculty who doesn't like me, still doesn't like me, who like will see me in public and will not talk to me, argued against me and my answer. Like she had, I don't remember what her question was, but she started, well, what about this? And I'm like, well, I don't know. And I didn't know, right? Like I was an assistant, very limited experience and I didn't have access to no care. So I didn't know anything, but she was like, she was harsh.
Yeah. I remember like the list of questions I got. One was political. And
I think that's what she had.
And that's the one she had with me too. And that was my first question, I was like, well, at least like I got it out of the way, you know, so
what
I wasn't anticipating it. I don't remember, but it was political and like politics is not my like strong suit.
Yeah.
It was like my first question, but I had one of my classmates, she had interviewed at another university in Texas, and she was telling me that interview process, they gave you a tour, because when we had ours, we didn't get a tour.
We got a tour.
She said she got a tour, and then they had to answer like a puzzle. Yeah. They had to do like a interactive puzzle. So I thought that was interesting how like, I think she said that she wasn't asked anything dental related at all, but it was like an interactive puzzle.
Okay.
To see like how you work.
So some dental schools interviews require you to wax during your interview.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of tough though if you've never done
that
it before.
Tough. Yeah. Yeah. So people will like practice for that. Now for dental hygiene schools here in our area, they require you to take an entrance exam. And it's not an entrance exam related to, like, it's like reasoning.
Yeah, you can't study for it.
You can't study for it.
One of the schools had already started it, so I had taken it.
DHAT?
No, it's called like the HRSA or something.
Oh, okay.
I think it's the health science reasoning test or something.
They also do, I know like my school now, you have to take the DAT to apply, but it's not the DAT, it's the DHAT. I'm not sure on the exact lineup, but it's the DAT. It just doesn't have organic chem, but it has spatial reasoning, it has bio, it has everything that DAT has, but just not organic chemistry. But spatial reasoning is on there, which is the same thing, like logic or whatever. Yeah. Reading comprehension's on there. Yeah.
Luckily, we didn't have to do that. I just had to get it.
I remember one question I had was like, they asked, so possible interview questions, right? That if you wanted to find out more about fluoride and the effects of it, where would you look? Where would you do that research? So I was like, we'll look at scientific journals.
I know,
I was like talking to other dental professionals. Like, I remember that was my answer, but that was one of the
questions. That's also something you learn in school. It's all evidence-based research. And
so I'm saying, like, I wonder if they're just trying to see like how much you know.
Do not say you want to go to dental hygiene school because you want to go to dental school.
No.
Yeah. And I had students interview with me and say that. And I'm like, did you not? That's not what we want to hear.
I also think too, obviously always make sure, and I think this goes without saying, but perhaps not for everyone, anticipate being asked your strengths and weaknesses, making sure that your weaknesses are something that is tangible and something that you've recognized about yourself and implemented a change within yourself.
Yes. Always include what the solution is, not just saying this is my weakness, but, you know, knowing which direction you're going to go in. And that's for like for school and I think for professional too, that they would ask when you get to your career.
We had a cheating question.
Yes. We had an ethics question.
What would you do if your classmate was cheating? Would you like tell on them? And I think somebody said, they're going to mind their business. I feel like that's what my sister would say. I don't know. Probably not. That's probably not what she said. But they don't want to say, they don't want to hear you say that you want to mind your business. They want to hear you say that you'd report them, and you'd report them, one, not just because it's unfair, because of patient safety, because we need to graduate competent clinicians who have their patients' health in their hands. They want to make sure that patient safety is a priority. I would say something like along those lines, not just like the answer that they want to hear, or what you think that they want to hear, which is like, oh no, they shouldn't be cheating. Cheating is bad. Why is cheating bad? Like, what are the consequences of this cheating and not knowing the information? It means that it leads to not the best care.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
I would say put patients first. If you have any questions related to patient care or money is not a priority, right? Whether an insurance pays for something is not a priority. A priority is the patient first. So patient-centered answers. So if the question is, well, your patient needs a certain amount of care, but your insurance will only pay this much, what do you do? Well, the patient gets what the patient needs. It's not about the money. It's about the patient. So really, I think like focusing on that. I think that was one of the questions. Because for me, I was like, oh, whatever the insurance pays for. Because I grew up poor. And that's like where my mind went.
But not to let insurance dictate care. Yeah. Well, let's flip to talk about professional interviews.
I haven't done one of those in a minute. I guess you probably have, Angela.
Well, it was really like, I haven't done one in a minute either. I haven't done a formal one because, you know, some of the jobs I find is like word of mouth or referral, you know, or like I've had a relationship with them in one way or another before.
So what are some questions then you would ask in office if like, maybe not like an interview thing, but like, okay, the interview is going well and they're like, hey, what questions do you have? What questions should I be asking?
I would ask, what does the schedule look like? How you schedule patients, how much time you get for patients. That is one thing I looked at going in. And then what are your responsibilities? What are your responsibilities versus maybe assistant or even with what you have to do, maybe extended duties as well.
Yeah.
I would look for that. Talk about insurance instruments. Well, actually knowing what kind of payment they receive, and because that can dictate other things that you're looking for too, but also knowing what equipment and instruments they have.
I saw a post on Facebook recently of a dentist who said, oh, I have a new hygienist coming on. This new hygienist wants me to buy her these instruments, and they wanted, I think, Q3D is what they wanted. And the hygienist is like, but I've been looking on eBay. What do y'all think the quality is of these eBay ones? And there was people on there they're like, what do y'all think? Some of the were saying, like, if they're already coming in this demanding, I wouldn't take them. And then some other people were saying, like, invest in your hygienist.
Yes.
Right? Like, if your hygienist says, like, they need something, then invest in them so they can do their job. But what I would say is, like, as you're getting the office tour, maybe look at the instruments right before you go and be like, I'm going to need new instruments. Maybe take a look at what they have first, because they might actually have good instruments, you know?
Oh, yeah. And then if the dentist is skeptical, you know, whoever's ordering is skeptical, but I recently asked for new instruments. And then, but this is after, like, I sharpened, right. I know the other hygienist, and I talked to the other hygienist too. And I was like, are you on the same boat as me? Am I just the one? Maybe I'm doing something wrong, you know? And then I asked him, I'm like, hey, you know, I think some things need to be replaced. Do you have a budget? So then that way I can look within that as well.
Yeah.
And then I gave the information to the person in charge of ordering. But I went through a process before asking it, you know, straight away and just making sure, like, okay, is it just this one that's not working that we can replace? Or is it, you know, a certain set of them?
So I would say maybe break out your questions. I think there's like post formal interview questions and then there's post working interview questions. So I would ask questions at like post interview, you know, how long are my appointments? Do I get more time for SRPs? Do I get more time for sealants? Am I required to check out the patient and schedule their next appointment? Is that included in my time slot too? Am I required to like fill out their postcard for the reminder visit? You know, am I taking radiograph? Then after doing your working interview, right, where you actually get a feel for the schedule, where you're getting paid, always have to get paid. Then at the end of that day, if those instruments are dull, ask them, hey, do y'all send out your instruments to get sharpened? Is there a budget? Is there, you know, I'm noticing that there are some things that aren't too great.
I think asking also the office what their goals are and what their expectations are of you, because it's also like showing the office that you care. You want to make sure you're in line.
I would say same things like for scrubs and stuff. Are you required to wear a certain color of scrubs? Can you wear like whatever you want to wear? And if they require you to wear a certain color of scrubs, do they have a budget allocated for that?
Single allowance. I think to my perception of interviews, I'm a little bit more unconventional because for me, I go a lot off the vibe. So when I go for an interview, I go a little loosey-goosey. I'm like completely unprepared, but I always anticipate, you know, like what made you want to become a hygienist? Because typically that's always, and then I
would say
answer truthfully and honestly in that one.
The truth.
I like to know about the dentist because I feel like I can gauge a lot of the values based on who they are as a person. So I like to ask the dentist, you know, what do you enjoy most about dentistry? What's your favorite procedure? I think that tells a lot of where their values are in terms of what you're going to be able to anticipate for the practice. And I like to ask them, what do you feel hygiene brings to your practice? Yeah. Like, why have a hygiene department? Like, how is hygiene important?
That's a good way.
Yeah, because then, you know, if they're just saying production, it's like, well, what do you do? Like, my huge $150 an hour isn't exactly going to keep you afloat. But if they focus more on the value and the patient retention and just like the relationship building, I think those practices that focus more on the patient versus the money are more likely to invest in the hygiene department, you know, and I want to be invested in, and I need to work for a human. I need to just have completely like loyal, complete trust in who I'm working with because I've noticed myself as an individual. That's what empowers me. So Dr. Rami, who I work with on Saturdays, hands down the best dentist I've ever worked with. He is amazing. And he could tell me that he needs to amputate a leg on a patient to fix number 14. And I'd be like, that sucks, but let's do it. You know, like, I'd be like, I don't understand, but I trust you, like, kind of crummy, but I'm with you. You know, like, everything he said, he is phenomenal. And it's such a breath of fresh air to work with someone that's so passionate about what they do. And that's where I know I need to be. So I can't go work someplace that everything's just based on production and numbers and figures and everything. Because if there's not that passion there that matches my passion,
I also feel like if they asked you like, why are you going to hygiene? That would be your answer, is like how passionate you are about like dental hygiene and dentistry.
Yeah, I just enjoy it. But I like to work with someone else that also enjoys what they like. I have no desire to touch someone's natural tooth. I don't ever want to drill into it. I don't ever want to change it. I will do anything I can to prevent any restorative work. But I see the beauty in restoring someone's smile and restoring a tooth. I don't have that passion to restore tooth.
Yeah.
But the people that do, how beautiful is that? Like, I would love to work with someone that has that same passion I have for hygiene, for like restorative dentistry. Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
So that's important to me. So the logistics and everything too, but I also feel like a lot of those logistical things of appointment times and budget and everything fall into place when someone's values are in the right spot.
I was going to say they seem to work in tandem, because I feel like if you're looking at the schedule and how much they allow per patient, that sort of shows where their value lies too. If they're saying you only get 30 minutes for an SRP, well, what is that saying about right. the practice?
Yeah.
So I think both sides of the question can expose different things about the practice and see.
But I really like what you said, because about they'll ask you like why you got into dental hygiene, because now when I think about that would be something, definitely a question that I would have to think about, because on the truth answer is that I got into dental hygiene out of necessity, was because I was a single mom with two kids and I needed to be able to provide for them. But that's not the answer you would want to give, because you don't necessarily want to tell them like family personal things. They don't need to know that you're a single mom. They don't need to know that you, you know, are struggling for money. They don't need to know, and they're not allowed to ask you those things legally anyways, right? So practice those answers. So I'd have to maybe fib a little bit and make up a story. But I was telling them who I was like, oh, I think maybe I'll start working part-time at an office. I love working in public health. The practice I'm at right now is super, super far. And so it's at least an hour. And I'm like, well, maybe there's an office by me where I could still do some clinical. I'm like, but I haven't interviewed for a job in a long time. And I don't even know what like general dentistry is like, really, after having not worked in it for such a long time. We'll see. We'll see what happens. These are helping me though. Yeah. These are helping me prepare.
It's interesting when you compare the hygiene school interview versus the professional interview. For me, I always keep in mind, or I tell, you know, people who DM me to keep in mind, when you go to a program, what they're really asking or what they're really looking for when you're sitting there talking about, oh, I love teeth, is does this person have enough grit to get through this program? Like, are they a waste of money? Like, are we going to bring them on? They're going to fail out after a semester or two, and we're not going to get the rest of their tuition.
But also in heart for the patients and the community and for yeah. dentistry.
That was how I felt, at least with our interview questions. Like, they were just kind of getting at, like, are you going to be able to survive through the program?
That was one of their questions. Like, was do it? You think that you can handle the workload? Yeah. My answer was like, well, I was taking four classes at two or three campuses, and I was doing a like internship. I was like, yeah, here are the reasons. Like, if I'm doing this, I can definitely do that.
The one question I wasn't prepared for that you just sparked in my memory was, if you don't get into the program, what are you going to do?
Oh.
And I almost kind of like that I wasn't prepared, because I'm pretty transparent, but I was very transparent in the moment. Like, they could see that I had never thought about not getting in.
Yeah.
And I think like they liked that, I guess, in the moment, but it was very authentic.
That's a really good question.
Do anything. And we've talked about before, you know, I was a bit of a nerd. So I had a 4.0. I had like straight A's going in.
Like, if there was nothing I could have bet.
I couldn't be like, oh, I would retake A and P2 because I got an A minus. Like, no, I had straight A's. So I had like no way of.
So what'd you say?
Academically, I think I would just say I would try again next year.
Yeah, that's probably what I would say. I would reapply. Yeah.
I was like, this is all I want. This is where I see myself. And if I don't get in, I'm not going to give up.
I would be like, another school just interviewed me. So which I did already had an interview with another school.
Did you apply to each of you? So, Angela, did you apply to other schools or was it just the one? Because I know like everyone was telling me don't always just apply to one school.
To just UT.
Just UT, yeah.
Yeah, I applied to all three because I was older. I was when I decided to go to dental hygiene school, and I'm like, I'm doing this now.
Yeah,
like, I'm doing this now somewhere.
I
applied everywhere that I could. Oh, I already had a bachelor's. So I was like,
I didn't have a bachelor's. I'd been in community college. I felt like forever and ever and ever. I need to make progress, I felt like. So I really wanted a bachelor's degree. But I would have taken the other ones because Lone Star, top-notch dental hygiene school.
Yeah. That one actually did not even get an interview. They're because so you have hard. To have a certain number of yeah. points. Yeah. And then it's a smaller class too. But the other two schools I got my interviews for and accepted into both.
It was funny. Okay, I did apply. I was going to apply to UT San Antonio and UT Houston. My interview for UT Houston was before the application deadline for UT San Antonio. So I didn't submit my application at UT San Antonio. Like, I didn't submit my transcripts and stuff. And so they sent me a rejection letter. And I was like,
rude.
Rejection? I didn't even finish your application. But yeah, I felt rude. It felt personal.
You send them a rejection letter back. They want to go anyway. I feel like also too, like the professional interview aspect, it's interesting because I've talked about it on my stories before, I remember, and I wouldn't be able to find it in my archives offhand, but who hosts the interview? It's not always dentists. A lot of times it's the office manager. I remember I did a poll once and it was it the dentist that did it? Was it the office manager that did it? Was it either the office manager or someone else and the dentist just popped in? it was pretty equally spread. Sometimes the people never even met the dentist. So
when I was clinical operations manager, it was me and the manager that would do the interviews. And then if they got past us, then they met the dentist.
And the dentist probably just was basically like a personality check.
I guess that's true. That's kind of how we did. When I was director, I did the initial part of the interview. And then when Dr. Nguyen was done with her patients, we were like, oh, and then here's Dr. Nguyen. And so Dr. Nguyen would join for the second part of that.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. It was interesting. She and I were a good team, I think, but she had to see patients. So, and we also didn't want to like schedule interviews after work hours. Like we wanted to get it done. And I think if it's like, so I can see that.
We go in and we already see that it's not a match, you know, then why waste someone else's time?
Right. Yeah. You're like a screener.
Pretty much. Well, we actually did an initial, the office manager would do an initial screening over the phone. And then after they over the phone, then they'll bring them in. And then from there, and then sometimes it was if the doctor had time to, if like something came up and they had to see patients back to back, then it would be like the working interview. They would meet the doctor and at that initial interview.
I had people who would schedule an interview and then not show. Oh my God.
Yes, tons.
Yeah.
For all positions?
Well, we mostly had assistant positions.
Not for dental hygiene, but or front desk.
I did appreciate there was a dental assistant who was like, yeah, I would love to work in public health, but he wanted $30 an hour. And I was like, I appreciate you letting me know. That's going to be a no for us. We have like $15 if you're lucky. Wow. Like I was like, dang, why'd I go to dental hygiene school if I could get $30 an hour as an assistant? They must be really, really good though.
We had a front desk and I liked her. I still think about her. It's been a long time. But we hired her. She came for one day. And then at the end of the day, she even asked questions like, oh, where'd you get your scrub top? I would like one like that. You know, insinuating that she's going to wear it here. So it seemed like the day ended on a good note. Next day, she never came, never answered any phone calls, called her emergency contact, nothing. It was just like out of the blue. Eventually, like, someone's like, you should have maybe called for a welfare check. It just didn't even cross my mind at that time. Yeah, really out of the blue. She just like disappeared, never called back. And we always reach out like 2 or 3 times, you know, just to like check and make sure.
I would say the other thing that I would do if I am going to go interview in a dental practice, I would look up the dental practice, look up the dentist's names, and then I would search their names on Texas State Dental Board to see if they have any actions against their license. So you can do that. Just do Texas State Dental Board dental license search, and you click dentist, you put the name in, and it'll pop them up. You open it, you scroll all the way to the bottom, and on the bottom, they'll have, if they have had actions against their license, you'll see these attachments. And so you can open those and read them and see why they had disciplinary actions against their license.
And that's public information in any state, too.
Yeah,
right?
So it just varies by your state. I just know how to do it for Texas.
That's a good point.
I would do that because if they have multiple actions, I'm not interested in working. You know, I worked with one dentist who had an action against his license, and such a great dentist. Like really, really great guy. And we talked about it because he told me, he's like, because we were applying and he knew that I was going to find out. We're applying for FQHC status. And so he's like, this is going to come up on my license. And so just so you know. And I was like, oh, it's okay. And I'm trying to give him grace. He's like, no, I learned my lesson. I was young and naive. And like, he like took ownership for like whatever it was that he had done. And so I appreciate that. So I don't think that like everybody, you know, things happen, right? But if you got multiple actions, then I don't know. Because I think it's hard to get actually against your license.
I would have never thought about that. And I didn't research the dentist before. I would never thought about that. For me, I would just think, before knowing how the system works, just thinking, well, if they did something wrong, then they wouldn't be practicing. But it takes a while for these actions to be processed. And then they could have multiple, depending on what they are. They still keep their license. So that is...
My sister works for a staffing platform, and they have to audit licenses before they're allowed on the platform. And she says, there's been plenty of times where, you know, dentists, hygienists will have things on their license. And then they'll even call her out and be like, you didn't approve my account. And she's like, well, no, because you have actually got your license. And one of them was like, what? She's like, cocaine usage.
Oh, my gosh.
She's like, oh, yeah. Like, so I'm like, that's kind of nice that her, like her staffing platform she works for, like, obviously vets who gets on there. But you can have actions against your license. I know people who've gotten like DUIs and still have gotten a license.
I thought this is what you were gonna say. I like to go on to the office's website and read the about me about the doctor, know where they went to school, what they're involved in, what their like hobbies are, like, I don't know, just to see just to know who they are as people. I like that.
No, that's good, because then, you know, at the end, they're always like, do you have any questions? I think it's good to be able to, not to bring it up out of left field, but if you can somehow weave into that, like, oh yeah, I read that you went to this school. That was my hometown. Then they know that you've done your research and that you were interested in them. And it shows your level of interest as well in the office. So I think it's, I mean, I always learned to do research about the practice and the dentist before going in. That way you're prepared.
When do you ask about pay, and how do you ask about pay? Do you ask about pay right after the initial interview or after the working interview?
A little bit of both. I think I think you want to make sure they're going to pay you for the working interview. So if you're going to have...
Or like one time I didn't ask and they paid me $10 less than the going rate for my working interview.
They pay you.
Yeah. So I would love the opportunity to do a working interview with you. This is my temp rate maybe, or what is your compensation for working interviews? Maybe ask them, because you don't want to be the first one to be like, this is my number. Now, if they come, and if you know that for their working interview rate is less, far less than what you would even like, could get you close to what your expectations are when you get hired, then maybe don't waste your time and be like, and not do the working interview. Then the working interview part, then I would have the discussion about compensation and what pay structure looks like.
Because it would make sense to working interview to be around temp rate, because then you could go temp.
Exactly. and that could be the thing. It's like, well, this is our rate. And be like, well, would you maybe consider doing the going temp rate, since I will be having to pay taxes on this, and also because, I mean, depending on what you decide, because I'm also losing opportunity to go in temp. Then I think after the working interview, because maybe you might do the working interview, decide like, hey, I don't actually want to work for these people. So then why even have to get into conversation about money? You don't even want to work for them. So you do the working interview and you decide, okay, I like it. Then would you have a moment to talk about next steps? About, you know, I really enjoyed my day today. I really enjoyed how Susie helped me. I really liked the patients. Everybody was super friendly. I love the opportunity about, you know, having a longer term relationship with this practice. And maybe ask them first, like, what did you think? Were there things that like you would agree, if they would agree or disagree, things that they would like you to change? And then I think at the end, towards the end of the conversation, ask, what does compensation look like, including benefits?
Yes. Yes. Including benefits. So that compensation rate may not be exactly what you have in mind, but hear them out on seeing what their benefits are, if they have any. Absolutely.
Now, what's your recommendation? Sometimes I've seen on applications, it will actually ask, what's your expected compensation rate per hour?
Some people write negotiable on there.
Oh, that's cool. I never even thought of that.
Like, they don't put a number.
I remember I put a number. And when I first moved here, I had applied to two places. It was the place I am at now and then another one. And the other one had it on their application. And then the office manager, when she was looking over, she goes, you're asking a dollar higher than what we typically start at. I'm sure it's not going to be a problem, but I just do have to run it by him. But I remember like thinking like that was interesting. Cause when I wasn't prepared for that to be on an application.
We have that on our application.
I like that negotiable.
Yeah, that's clever. I never really thought of that.
And I think there are some applications that tell you what like the going rate are, which also like what's good about like temping before, because you kind of then get to know like, okay, what's expected, how much are they paying? And they're paying X amount for what am I expected to do for that amount, you know? Or ask, you know, other hygienists in the area what they think is reasonable. Don't undersell yourself. I would say even as a new grad, you have the same skill set as we, maybe more experienced hygienists have. You're doing the same job, producing as much. And so then you deserve that compensation equally.
Absolutely.
Well, we hope that was helpful. If you have any interview tips or things that you would ask, send us a DM, share that with us. So that way we can share it with you all. We appreciate y'all so much. Appreciate your loyalty in listening. If you have topic ideas, something you want us to talk about, let us know. And we'll see you next week.
See you then.
Thank you for listening to Positively Hygiene.
Join us every Tuesday for a new episode.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram for the opportunity for how you can contribute to our podcast.
And follow and review Positively Hygiene on Apple and Spotify Podcasts.